We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, October 25th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll hear about the League of Women Voters event, Unmask the Vote, with Chris Neamey. Todd Hunt will preview the Juno Community Band's Roman Festival. We'll learn about a photography workshop at Kindred Post, and Janet Collins will preview her author's talk at the State Library, Archives, and Museum. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more, right here on a Juno Afternoon. Looking at weather today, patchy freezing fog, chance of rain, highs in the mid-40s. Tonight, rain likely, and tomorrow, more rain, maybe heavy at times. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today, we begin a series, State of Change, looking at efforts to build economic resiliency on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. The Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation was founded in 2007 to build the power of the local community by creating lasting systemic change. In this first report, Jim Kent visits Thunder Valley's offices to uncover what sparked the grassroots effort and what's kept the nonprofit alive.
Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is located near Sharp's Corner, the last stop for gas, food, and essentials as you approach the heart of the Pine Ridge Reservation. And it makes sense that a group founded through a spiritual gathering should have its home near a tribal nation's heart. Thunder Valley spokesman Andrew Ironshell explains that it all began with venting about the various needs of the Lakota people.
And then that spiritual process became a call to action. So really pointing to fingers back at ourselves and asking ourselves as community people, as citizens of this tribal community, what's our role and what's our responsibility?
These conversations, explains Ironshell, led those in attendance to realize that they could have an impact on their people.
So from those thoughts started this conversation about, well, we do have the capacity to create some change among this small circle that's doing this complaining. And so when we looked around and acknowledged each other's talents and virtues and things like that, well, let's do something together. And so what we have today is kind of a cause and effect of some of those conversations.
Ironshell adds that key to Thunder Valley's development was realizing from the start that there would be challenges with personalities, politics, and available resources. Supporting each other helped in that process, recalls Ironshell, but understanding that change would take time and having the patience to accept that has been equally important in Thunder Valley's success. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Next week's State of Change story will look at a language immersion program. State of Change is a project in collaboration with High Country News and the Solutions Journalism Network. Canada's Indigenous leaders have joined the chorus of Canadians mourning the death of the frontman for the band The Tragically Hip. Gord Downey died last week at the age of 53. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Downey was honored with an eagle feather nearly a year ago during an emotional special chief ceremony in Quebec, where he was named the man who walks among the stars. By that time, Downey had told the world that he was suffering from an aggressive and terminal form of brain cancer. In his final months, he devoted much of his time advocating on Native issues. And part of that was a project called Secret Path, which told the story of Chaney Wenjack, who died running away from a residential school in 1966. All proceeds from the album and the graphic novel are being donated to the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation. Perry Bellegarde is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations.
I think it was just his personality, his character. He could walk into a room and everybody would bond. He made everybody feel important. And that was just his gift. And so when I say he made my job easier, he really did. Because he reached and touched people about First Nations issues and reconciliation and social justice. Reached a lot of people that I couldn't as National Chief. So we lift him up in high regard.
The Minister of Indigenous Affairs said Downey's death is an incredible loss. She said he set an example for all Canadians, and she said he will still be a guide during the reconciliation process.
That was Dan Karpinchuk reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at AARP.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today represents the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the show, Chris Nemi.
Thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome. How are you connected to the League of Women Voters?
Well, I'm currently on the board and currently the president of the Juno League of Women Voters.
All right, so you're in charge. You're the boss. Thanks again for being here today. Can you tell us a little bit about the League of Women Voters in general? What do they do for the good people of Juneau?
Okay, well, the League was established in Juneau in 1964. The National League has been around since 1920. Of course, women had the vote, got the vote, and so we are affiliated also with the United States League of Women Voters. In Alaska, there are four leagues. Anchorage, Fairbanks area has the Tanana Valley League, our Juneau League, and the Kenai-Sildotna League on the Kenai Peninsula. And in Juneau, we do such activities as voter services, which means that we provide for a registration of naturalized citizens at their ceremonies here. We also provide for citizen education, and that can be in the form of workshops. We did a workshop last June on how to run for local office, and actually two people, one school board member and one assembly member, attended those workshops, among others, and two of those people were elected. So
that's very cool.
And then we also provide education to all of Juneau's eighth graders. They visit the Capitol building in January and February, usually, the past few years. And we introduce them, many of them, to the three branches of government. They get to meet with some of the legislators. They usually get to meet with somebody. Sometimes it's the governor or the lieutenant governor or somebody from that from their office. And then we take them up to visit the judicial branch, and they usually get to see something like a therapeutic court.
Like a therapeutic court?
Uh-huh.
What
so,
is that?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a court session where people have been found convicted of possession of drugs or alcohol, and it's set up a little differently in that there is more of an emphasis on rehabilitation.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
and then we also have another thing that we do is advocacy. During coming up, we will have a session. We're in session right now in another legislative session. But starting in January, we follow bills, and we sometimes provide testimony on bills of importance to us.
But your group is nonpartisan, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct. We don't promote any single party or any single candidate, but we like to have information out. We like an informed public, and we promote that.
And do you put out an election guide from time to time?
Yes. In fact, we did work with the Juneau Empire. We collected questions from our league members and worked with the Juneau Empire to have a guide.
So it sounds like you have plenty to keep you busy between now and the next election. But when is the next election?
Well, our next election will be, next year. Mm-hmm. So we just finished our one session in October. for local elections, and our local elections next year will be October again.
Okay, great. So you only put out the election guides for local elections?
Well, we help too with some of the state also, but those elections are in November.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for all that background information, but you're actually here because the League of Women Voters has a fundraiser coming up, which is what you came to talk about today, and it's called Unmask the Vote. Now, does the name have any kind of veiled meaning, politically speaking?
Well, we like to have fun. We're a social group as well. And this year, because it's happening so close to Halloween, we thought we would invite people to wear costumes. It's not required, but suggested to wear a costume. And because we're so involved with voting, we just wanted a catchy phrase for our costume party.
Well, it's a good one. And this is an annual event, correct?
Yes, it has. Well, this is the third year we've done it.
Okay.
And this year, it's Friday, this Friday that's coming up, October 27th. And it'll be from 5 p.m. till 7:30 p.m. in the Hangar Ballroom.
Great venue.
Right. Again, costumes suggested but not required. We are going to have a costume, actually a contest, so that should be fun. And there'll be wine tasting and very good hors d'oeuvres, or hors d'oeuvres that we've had in the past. People really rave about them.
You mentioned they're substantial,
yes.
So they're more than just finger food.
Yes. And there'll be a silent auction, so people will be able to come away with such prizes that they can bid on. For example, tickets to a music concert at the Jack, a gourmet dinner for six, they can bid on that. Yoga classes, artwork, those are books that will be available. So these are just some examples of some of the things that people can bid on. There usually is a very wide range of things to bid on. Live music will be provided by Rob Cohen on the piano.
Excellent.
Nice background music.
Definitely.
And there'll be an additional door prizes as well.
Oh, well, that just sounds like a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fundraiser. It's an annual event. Where do the proceeds go?
Yes. Well, they go to promote the activities that we do, things like materials. For example, the workshop materials on how to run for office. People received a large notebook of things, and it costs to produce that. At some of our meetings, coffee, things like that are not free. With the children that come up to the Capitol, materials for them as well as bus transportation. So we do provide, those types of things for our activities. I did want to mention that tickets to our event will be $30 each. Or if you bring a friend, come with a friend, you can both get in for $50. So that would save you each $5. And you can get tickets at our website. So you can go to junolwv.org. And it'll direct you on how you can purchase some tickets.
Great.
Or you can buy them at the door, but we're encouraging people to, get them in advance.
Now, what are you going to dress up as?
Well, as a matter of fact, I just came from a costume trial. My daughter and I have been working on this, and my costume is going to be a character that's seen in movies, cartoon and Walt Disney character that likes Dalmatians, but likes Dalmatians for the wrong reason.
Likes them a little too much. All right, I can guess what you're going to be then. And is your daughter going to be a character as well?
She is deciding what she's going to do.
Do you think there will be any politically themed costumes?
You
any
never
political
know.
Political figures?
You never know.
I think that would be a good idea. All right, so if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with President of the League of Women Voters, Chris Neamey, talking about Unmask the Vote, their annual fundraiser. It's this Friday, and there will be food and a wine tasting. Are there any other organizations involved in the event, any sponsors you want to thank while we're on the air?
Well, we work really with, just a lot of the local organizations. We appreciate coming on the air with you at KTOO. The Juno Empire was really gracious and gave some advertising to us as a community event. And so that's the type of thing, you know, that we, you know, get involved with that way. Yeah.
Excellent. And and the event is again at the Hangar Ballroom. It's $30 for one person, $50 for two people. There's a silent auction, wine tasting, food, costumes encouraged, and it's a fundraiser for a wonderful cause. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Chris?
Let's see. We do have some wine distributors that are coming in.
Yeah, let's talk about where the wine is coming from.
Yeah, they...
Checking the notes.
Yeah,
it's there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Getting warmer?
Yeah. Too many papers here, it looks like. Well, you'll just have to come and meet the wine distributors.
Okay,
they've been
that
very,
sounds good.
Very helpful in the past and come up with really wonderful bottles of wine.
I'm sure it'll be delicious. So, if you find that information after we go to break, I will tell the good listeners what it is.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks again for being here with us, Chris, and best of luck with the event on Friday.
Thank you. And everybody, come join us.
All right. Well, I'm ready. I'm willing. And I'm able to rock and roll all night. I'm ready. I'm willing. And I'm able to rock and roll all night. Come on, pretty baby. We're gonna rock, we're gonna roll until the broad daylight. Because I'm ready. So you better come and go with me. We're gonna rock and roll. Tell them all about free. Talking on the phone is not my speed. Don't send me no letter cause I can't read. Don't be long cause I'll be gone. We're gonna rock and roll long night long. Cause I'm ready, I'm willing, and I'm able to rock and roll all night. I'm ready, I'm willing, and I'm able to rock and roll all night. Come on, pretty baby. We're gonna rock, we're gonna roll until tomorrow night. Talking on the phone is not my speed. Don't send me no letter cause I can't read. I'm able to rock and roll all night. Come on, pretty baby. We're gonna rock, we're gonna roll until tomorrow.
The tobacco industry has led people to believe chewing tobacco is safe. They market their products to look like gum and mints and promote them in activities like baseball and hunting. The truth is, smokeless tobacco is addictive and causes oral, stomach, and pancreatic cancers. Don't be tricked by the tobacco industry. For free support quitting, call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
This is Bird Note. Fall is a great time to put out a suet feeder. Suet cakes are mostly fat, giving birds a high energy boost to help them survive the cold weather. Who likes suet? It's a long and varied list. Typical visitors include chickadees and titmice, nuthatches, jays, and woodpeckers. And keep an eye out for other birds at your suet feeder, especially those whose beaks can't open seeds. Tiny kinglets, among the smallest of all songbirds, sometimes hover at the feeder. Wrens love a bite of suet, too, as well as almost any kind of sparrow or wintering warbler. Alas, Non-native European starlings also find suet hard to resist, but there are suet feeders designed to exclude starlings while letting the regular native birds get to the good stuff. One of those native birds is the brown creeper. It's an especially cool bird to discover at your feeder because it's most often glimpsed disappearing briskly up the trunk of a tree. In the West, mobs of tiny bush tits sometimes blanket a chunk of suet, taking a break from their normal diet of insects and spiders. It's high time to hang up the suet feeder. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for BirdNote comes from Bloomsbury, a publisher of natural history books and birding guides. Critical Critters by Ralph Steadman and Carrie Levy is available now.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Todd Hunt and Sarah McNair Grove about the Taku Winds concert. The theme is Roman Festival, and here is one of the pieces they'll be performing. It's called Roman Festivals.
Thank you.
Okay, you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Sarah McNair Grove and Todd Hunt, here to tell us about the upcoming Taku Winds concert. Welcome back to the show, both of you.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley.
Yeah, repeat customers here on a Juno Afternoon. Now, the Taku Winds, which is the best name ever, by the way, are one of several Juno community bands. Could you tell us a bit more about the Juno community bands in general?
Okay, it's a group of adult musicians who play wind, brass, and percussion instruments that like getting together and playing good band music. But this concert is actually kind of fun because we're playing transcriptions of orchestral music. So it's a little bit different than traditional band music in terms of the style of music.
How is it different?
Well, so I guess I don't want to pigeonhole genres there. But, you know, you go to a band concert, you expect to hear a march, right? It's
okay.
Like, where's the John Philip Sousa? Yeah, we don't have any John Philip Sousa for you. But the one of the overtures we're playing, Wagner's overture to Rienzi, has a march section. So I figure that can sort of substitute in.
People can get their fix.
It's old, typically a little bit older. The newest piece on the program is actually fairly new. But the second newest piece on the program is like from the 20s. So older than a lot of the standard band stuff you do. So there's that, I guess.
And the Taku Winds are a woodwinds group, is that correct?
Well, woodwind, brass, and percussion, and one string bass player.
Uh-oh.
So we're very diverse.
And how many members are there in the band?
Oh, gosh. For this concert, we've got over 40, I think.
Yeah.
It's a big group this time.
This is a big group for us.
Yeah, normally it's about 30 to 35. But yeah.
That's interesting. I was picturing something smaller for some reason. So the concert this weekend is billed as a Roman festival. What inspired the theme?
So the centerpiece of the program is a piece by Ottorino Respighi, who is an early 20th century Italian composer who was Roman. So he was from Rome and he loved Rome and he wrote lots and lots of music about Rome. One of his most famous is The Pines of Rome, which has been done by the Juno Symphony in the last, at least 10 years or so. There's also The Fountains of Rome. And this is the third of these tone poems, I guess, for lack of a better term, Roman festivals. So he'll go through just different aspects of his home and write about it.
Excellent. And so that's one of the selections. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other ones that you'll be playing?
So I mentioned the overture to Rienzi by Wagner, and that has a slight Roman connection too. So Rienzi was a 14th century, I believe, revolutionary who really wanted to bring power to the people. And so that's the Roman connection there. The one of the other pieces we're doing is the Brahms Academic Festival Overture. And so it gets a little bit more tenuous here because it's a festival overture, right? So Roman festivals, we got Romans and we got festivals and all
You're
kinds of really fun stuff. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to make something work. So that is actually kind of a fun piece. It's by Brahms, who we normally think of as stodgy, guy, fantastic composer, but always super serious. This piece, he got an honorary doctorate from a university somewhere, and I forgot to check where that was, but somebody is checking right now, I'm sure, and will probably call in and tell us. But he was then encouraged to write a piece for this university. And he's like, well, okay, I'm going to write this academic festival overture. And he filled it full of student drinking songs. So every one of the tunes in it is one that the people at the university would know, but not from, singing in their classrooms, but at the tavern after class or perhaps during class.
And the concert's being performed at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium, so probably no beer.
No beer. We can pretend, though. And the fourth piece on the program, not necessarily in order of the program, but is totally outside of the program, is the Requiem by David Maslanka. And David Maslanka came to Juno a couple of years ago in the summer and worked with us for a week. We played his trombone concerto, and actually on another program in that same weekend, we did a number of his other pieces. And he was someone who I think really connected with the group, and we're a lot better because he's there. And so we have a really good connection with him. But he passed away in August. So that was about the time I was kind of putting the program together. I'm like, whoa, I guess we're going to have to honor him somehow. And so he had composed a requiem for wind ensemble. And so we're doing that. And so it's actually the only actual band piece on the program and not fitting into the Roman festivals theme, but still important nonetheless.
Definitely. And perhaps he'll be there in spirit.
Yes.
I bet he would be here in person if he could. Well, that's great. Well, thank you for the rundown. Is there any particular reason apart from the one you just mentioned as to why you selected these pieces or what made you want to perform them?
So that's a good question. We've done, you know, a number of concerts, actually probably since that Maslenka program, because that was a heavy hitter. And we've since done a few relatively easy programs, you know, music that we could read well and then play. And I thought, okay, we're getting too complacent. I need to find something really hard.
So, thank you.
Pushing them.
And so I succeeded. everything on the program is wildly difficult. But that was in part because I felt the group needed a challenge to rise to rather than reading music that we could do very easily and well, but give us something to really work on. And of course, a slightly shorter rehearsal process at the same time, which the way things go.
Can anyone who plays the instruments reasonably well be a part of Taku Winds, or is there an audition process?
Well, I don't know if you want to speak to that.
We do invite any adult player. We do sort of have a very informal process to be sure that they can play the music at the level we do, either by sitting down and playing with somebody who is already in the ensemble or sometimes coming to one rehearsal just to play with us and be sure that they can play the music that we need. But, yeah, it's open to just about anybody.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. So let's get down to the details here. The concert is this Sunday, October 29th at 3 p.m., Thunder Mountain Auditorium. Tickets are $20 for adults, $5 for students, and Todd Hunt is the conductor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sarah, how are you connected to the concert?
Well, I'm a player. I play clarinet, so I've been working very hard on this challenging music. And I'm also the president of the Juno Community Bands, which is the sponsor of the Taku Winds Ensemble.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great show, and thanks for being here to talk about it today. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, we just really encourage you to come out Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. We've got a great concert and music that you might recognize, but in a different setting of a wind symphony rather than string. So I think you'll really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m.
Yeah, and don't come expecting, you know, a nap. Because as we were just talking at the break, it's a whole bunch of loud music.
It sounds like it's really fun and energetic.
Too,
yeah, so. It sounds like it's going to be really fun. And the piece we played just before we started the interview was quite loud.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So great. Well, thanks again, both of you, for being here today, and good luck on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks, Shelly.
Thank you.
Get your wreath making on with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and KTOO Public Media at November's Art Glasses. Join us on November 9th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Jack for wreath making with Tamar Green of Miss Scarlet's. These are live evergreen wreaths. All supplies are included. No host bar. Tickets on sale now at the Jack, KTOO, and JAHC.org.
Blueberry Hills, it lingered until deep. But all of the vows you made were never to be. So we're a boy. You fought a missile.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 23 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me in the studio is Veronica Bunis, manager at Kindred Post. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Kindred Post is a gift shop and a post office. It's quite popular, especially during the summer. How was business this year?
It was crazy, crazy good.
Good. I'm so happy to hear that. The store has been open for a couple of years now. I was around before it opened, and I have really loved it ever since it came on the scene. So is there anything new or interesting on the shelves right now? Are you guys getting ready for the holiday season?
Yeah, we are gearing up for the holidays, getting all of our orders in. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting lots of new stuff. We've got a double booth at Public Market this year, so look for us then. Lots of fun specials and deals happening in the month of December as well, gearing up for the holidays.
Excellent. And you guys are involved with the downtown trick-or-treating festivities?
Yep. We're the ones organizing it. So between 2 and 6 p.m. on Halloween, over 50 downtown businesses are going to be passing out goodies. So walk around downtown and look for the orange balloons.
It's for big kids or little kids only, right? Not for big kids.
Oh, whatever kids think they need to go find some candy.
Okay. And if there's anyone out there listening who's wondering, what do I get Shelley for Christmas? Literally anything from Kindred Post. You guys have great stuff. So anyway, thanks for letting me gush over the shop, but you're actually here to talk about your photography workshop this weekend. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, so we carry a brand of automatic camera that, you know, prints out Polaroid-style photos, and that company has so graciously given us a dozen cameras just for hosting workshops. So this Sunday, 1 p.m. to about 3:30, start with an introduction to the camera, what all the fancy buttons do, then a guided photo session, you know, exploring the functions of the camera, and then a little bit of a free photo taking. Everyone gets 20 photos. That comes with the cost of the workshop, and any photo you take, you get to take home.
Interesting. So who should come to this workshop?
Really anybody with an interest in instant photography. Even kids are welcome. The owner, Christy, is going to have her son with her. He's 8, so anyone who wants to know like how a camera works. And, it's a really great Christmas gift, too. So if you can drum up the interest, figure out if that's what they want. Yeah.
So in this style of photography, it's called lomography?
Yeah.
Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, it's a bit more free form than standard photography. So some of the tenets of their practice is carry your camera with you all the time, shoot from the hip, you don't have to pay attention to what you're taking a picture of before you take the picture. It's just kind of whatever happens, and the camera provides a lot of creativity to make some cool stuff happen.
How much does one of these cameras run?
Basic runs about $149. We also have additions that come with full lens kits that go up to about $200.
And you have one here with you?
I do. I have one of every edition of the cameras that they have. This is their sort of fancier one with a nicer lens on it. But yeah, I, since working at Kindred Post, I've really gotten to love everything analog. So snail mail, wearing a watch instead of checking my phone all the time. And then the instant photography was just a natural progression of that. So I like being able to capture a moment in a physical way and have that in my hands instead of just stored on my camera roll where I'm never going to see it again.
How is this different from a Polaroid?
They've taken that technology and updated it quite a bit. So the photos develop faster, they last a lot longer. The camera itself is really intelligent, and it's full of sensors that detect your light and adjust your exposure and everything for you. So low light, bright light, you don't really have to do any adjusting. It just does that all for you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, would you take my picture now?
I sure will.
Thank you. This camera, it's pretty interesting looking. It's black. It's got a, it looks like a very like an old school camera, really. Kind of 80s style, boxy. What a great sound. And here comes the picture.
Sure, in about 5 minutes it'll be ready to look at.
Oh, thanks. Yep, not much to see right now. Well, thank you for that demo. That's
absolutely.
It's really interesting. The picture itself is about, I want to say, maybe like 2 inches by 3 inches.
Yep, it's a credit card size.
Yeah, credit card size, exactly. Great. All right, so that's so the workshop is this Sunday at Kindred Post. How much does it cost to get in to participate?
$45 per camera. So if you sign up with a friend, you each get $5 off. Or if you just want to share a camera, you just have to pay one registration fee.
Oh.
And just pass it off between you.
Okay, you can share the camera, share the photos. Mm-hmm. All the photos are theirs to keep?
Yep.
Excellent. Where's the best place to get more information?
You can give us a call at 907-523-5053. Check our Facebook page, Kindred Post, or shoot us an email, hello@kindredpost.com.
Oh, that's cute. Okay, well, thank you very much, Veronica, for being here with us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add or mention?
No. If you have any interest at all, give us a call. We'd love to tell you more about it.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to see how my photo turns out. Here it comes. Oh, that's great. I'll try to share this online. Well, thanks again, Veronica.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime.
If you want it, you can have it. But you gotta learn to reach out there and grab it. Cause everybody wants.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 25th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of Pablo Picasso, Malaga, Spain, 1881. He was just 18 years old, living in Barcelona, painting pictures of his friends, when one of his paintings was selected for inclusion in a World's Fair in Paris. He went to Paris, he saw paintings by Manet, Cézanne, Degas, Toulouse-Lautrec, and decided to be an artist. It's the birthday of the comedian Minnie Pearl, Sarah Ophelia Colley, born 1912 in Centerville, Tennessee. She was with the Grand Ole Opry for more than 50 years. It's the birthday of the novelist Anne Tyler, born in Minneapolis, 1941. Her family moved to various communes, and she grew up mostly in the mountains of North Carolina, where they raised milk goats and grew their own food. She learned folk crafts and traditional music. When they moved the family to Raleigh, she was sent to public school, and she had never used a telephone. Her feet were calloused from going without shoes. Anne Tyler said of her childhood, I learned to be alone and to entertain myself by imagining, and when I left the commune, I looked at the regular world from an unusually distant vantage point. One summer, she was working as a teenager on a tobacco farm, and she found a book by Eudora Welty at the library, including the short story The Wide Net, and it changed her life, particularly one line of the story, which was Edna Earle could sit and ponder all day on how the little tail of the sea got through the L in a Coca-Cola sign. And Tyler said it was a kind of revelation. I knew dozens of people like Edna Earle, small town, ordinary. I just didn't know you could write about them. She went to Duke. She fell in love, got married to an Iranian-born medical student, moved with him to Montreal, started working on a novel. Her first novel came out in 1964, If Morning Ever Comes. She was 22. A year later, another, The Tin Can Tree. Moved to Baltimore, 1965, where she's lived ever since. Most of Ann Tyler's novels are set there. She said it's a city with grit and sort of a feisty spirit to it. I think it's a very funny city, and I love it. But any Baltimorean can tell you I'm not a real Baltimorean. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Kuhlman, The Lower Chesapeake Bay. Whatever happened to the cross chest carry, the head carry, the hair carry, the tired swimmer, put your hands on my shoulders and look in my eyes, retrieval? And what became of the stride jump when you leap from impossible heights and land with your head above water so that you never lose sight of your drowning person? Or if he is close enough, where is the lifesaver ring attached to a rope you can hurl at your quarry, then haul him to safety? Or as a last resort, where is the dock onto which you tug the unconscious soul, place him face down, clear his mouth, straddle his legs, and press with your hands on both sides of his rib cage to the rhythm of out goes the bad ere in comes the good, and pray he will breathe? Hallowed methods we practiced over and over the summer I turned 18 to win my water safety instructor's badge. And where is the boy from Ephrata, Pennsylvania, I made out with night after night in the lee of the rotting boathouse at a small dank camp on the lower Chesapeake Bay? Maxine Kuhlman's poem, The Lower Chesapeake Bay, from Where I Live, New and Selected Poems, 1990 to 2010, published by W.W. Norton and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's about 11 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Freya Anderson here in the studio and Janet Collins joining us by phone. They're both here to tell us about an upcoming author's talk. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Janet Collins is the author of On the Arctic Frontier. Among other things, this book is about polar explorer Ernest Leffingwell. Janet, what makes him a worthy subject for a book? What's his claim to fame?
All right. He did quite a few things, and he's coming to light for the first time. So first off, he's best known for his pioneering work on permafrost in the discipline of geology. But in addition, he and a Danish gentleman determined the edge of the continental shelf off the north slope of Alaska. And that was significant because at the time, turn of the century, we're talking, folks believed that there was land north of Alaska, and in this case, the continental shelf is relatively close, and they had determined that likely there was not land north of Alaska. But in addition to all of this, he accurately mapped the coastline from Barrow to the Yukon border. He defined and mapped the geography and geology of a significant portion of the Arctic Refuge, and he was responsible for the nomenclature or the naming of many of the features.
Well, that's very interesting. And I thought I had heard or read somewhere that he also studied permafrost or had some contributions in that, to that field.
Yes, very much so. And it has to do with kind of the formation and his observations. And then within the book are some illustrations. He actually, all of his work on the North Slope of Alaska culminated in a U.S. Geological Survey Professional Paper 109, which actually is on the internet through Alaska State Department of Natural Resources. And it is just an amazing volume of work, not only on geography, geology, permafrost, but also he was kind of a Renaissance man. So his work included things about tents or sledges or dog harnesses, food and shelter, and he just it just reveals his years on the North Slope, which were between in 1906 and 1914.
Now, was he from a northern territory or anywhere in the north?
No, he was born and raised in Knoxville, Illinois, and he went to the University of Chicago to work on his PhD. So some of the features within the Arctic Refuge, like Mount Chamberlain, Mount Michelson, Mount Weller, and Salisbury, those were all geologists, and one's a physicist who was at the University of Chicago. So no, he wasn't from the North Slope or the Alaska at all.
Well, he wouldn't be the first to wander over here and see what's up. And it sounds like many of his discoveries and contributions are still considered relevant today, so that's quite impressive.
Oh, absolutely. That's so, it's amazing and it's wonderful. And in addition, you know, they're relevant from a number of different angles, but one of which is the work along the mapping of the coastline that he did so accurately, so that when years ago the agency was called the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey, and as they came through to remap the area, they had his work, and they were stunned with the accuracy given the technology and the tools that he had at the time.
Now, your book is a biography. Is there anything that you've uncovered about this explorer that hasn't been revealed before?
Well, actually, the great part is very little has been written about him. And he was not one to self-promote. And so, you know, he came back and he wrote a scientific publication, and he wasn't interested in kind of mass marketing like some of his peers at the time. And so that's very unusual. So this is all pretty much it's original research using primary sources, his journals. And I've found out just fascinating things along the way. And it was a small world for the time for Arctic explorers.
That sounds really fascinating. I know a lot of people here in Juneau are going to be really into that. So your talk is this Saturday. And what will you be covering in your talk?
Well, I have a PowerPoint presentation, which is mostly slides. The beauty of Leffingwell is that the U.S. Geological Survey actually has 267 photos he took up on their website. Now, I promise not to show very many. But,
no, you're not going to show all 200-something?
Yeah, we're good. And so... I've got a number of slides and then some quotes from the book that kind of explain, because beyond this amazing report that he did that encompassed all, you know, it's what did it take for him to get there? What were his experiences? What was his life like? What happened? You know, so it's one thing to read the report. It's another thing to see the story behind the report and the story of the man. So
right.
That's what we'll look at.
Well, thank you for that recap. And the talk is Saturday, as I mentioned. Freya, do you want to give us the details of the event?
Sure. I just wanted to pop in there, too, and say I had the opportunity to see the slides that she sent down, and they're really, really cool. So she's not being modest or anything. Or well, she is being modest, I guess.
I love a good PowerPoint myself.
Yeah, they're really fun. So the presentation is at 2 o'clock on Saturday, as you mentioned, and it's at the Andrew P. Cash of Baroff Building in our lecture hall there on the first floor.
Okay. And Janet filled in the rest.
Right.
Is there any other upcoming events at the APK that you want to mention?
Sure. We actually have some really fun things coming up. This first Friday, we have two solo shows opening. There's Annette Bellamy from Homer and Daniel Papke. And they're both just beautiful work. And related to that, on the following day, there are a couple of related kids programs. So if kids are, or parents, are interested.
Kids are big kids.
Right. Are interested in signing up. Information about that is on our website, and or they can give the library a call. And I suppose I should give the website and phone then.
Yeah, best place to find out more.
Right. So it's pretty easy. It's library.alaska.gov, and our phone number is 465-2920. And if you call too late, just leave a message and we'll get back to you.
Yes, you guys are very responsive. I'm over there quite a bit since I work right next door, and I love the library. It's such a great resource, and I just want to thank you both for being here today and sharing all those details. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
Not on this end, but thank you. I look forward to seeing everyone.
Yeah. Well, I could always go on and on about the library, but I guess I probably should
we're just
focus
about
a little
time,
bit.
So thank you. But we all know what a wonderful resource it is. And like I said, thanks again for being here. The talk is Saturday, October 28th at 2 p.m. at the APK. So don't miss out. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
School. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open. They moved into a place they both could afford.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Thank you to all my guests who were here today. We had League of Women Voters, and then we had Todd Hunt and Sarah McNair Grove to talk about the Taku Winds concert. Veronica from Kindred Post was here to talk about the photography workshop. My picture looks great. And we just heard from Janet Collins and Freya Anderson about the author's talk this Saturday. Jeff Brown is the producer of this show. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.